Hello, I'm Sam Downing from CBA Newsroom. The end of financial year has come around again, and it is a time when many Australians will complete their end of year tax return, and if we're lucky, receive a tax refund. To talk about what Australians choose to do with their tax refund and how financial institutions like CommBank can help make those decisions, I'm joined by Will Mailer, CBA's Head of Behavioural Economics. Will, great to talk to you today.
Great to be with you, Sam. Thank you.
So you lead the CBA behavioural science team. I want to start by getting you just to tell me about what that means and if this is something that all banks do.
Yeah, good question. So behavioural economics takes this idea that we carefully weigh the costs and benefits of all of our financial decisions and consider what we want today and what we want tomorrow almost perfectly or optimally. And we know humans don't necessarily behave that way. We tend to take shortcuts where our emotions get involved in our financial decisions. We're socially influenced. So what our team does is looks at the way that real humans actually make financial decisions. And we take those insights to reimagine financial services and products to help customers make better decisions and make those easier. We're a mixed discipline team of economists, psychologists, and data scientists. We work closely with research groups around the world at Harvard, Chicago, and locally. And we take a very empirical approach to our work. So we don't just implement ideas, we actually measure and try to understand how different designs and different financial services are helping customers.
And coming back to this idea of tax time, what do we know about tax time in Australia and how do you think Australians are faring this year?
Yeah, so you couldn't really imagine a more golden opportunity for financial well-being than tax time. So over the last few years, we've seen most Australians will get a refund, typically between $2,000 and $3,000, which is quite a big inflow for most Australian households. This is a great opportunity to progress towards a financial goal, recover from a financial setback, or even build up some emergency savings. And it's coming at a really, really important time. So we know that we're starting to see the CBA financial wellbeing observed score starting to decline as some of the government support programs are being reassessed. We know a third of our customers are living paycheck to paycheck and around 40% don't have a sufficient emergency buffer. So it's an excellent opportunity. It's a big inflow of cash for a lot of households and a good financial well-being opportunity to progress towards goals.
Yeah, you've mentioned earlier this figure of in excess of $2,000 is about the average amount that an Australian will receive from the ATO in their tax refund. Now, I believe that your research and experience with the bank suggests that Australians tend to perceive their tax financial return differently from their regular income. Can you talk about how you discovered that and why that difference comes about?
Yeah, so we know that when income comes to us in our fortnightly or monthly cycles, we tend to treat that as kind of living expense and we match it up with our day-to-day expenses. Now, it seems a bit crazy that if that money was then separated and just a little bit of it was paid to us in a lump at the end of the year, that we'd treat it very differently, but we do. And there's this idea of mental accounting where we put tags on our money and depending on where it comes from or how it comes to us, we'll spend it quite differently. So once we take that tax out of the monthly cycle and we pay it in a lump sum at the end of the year, people then may see that as free money or bonus money and spend it towards a splurge or a treat or a large durable expense rather than the monthly or weekly expense cycle. Now, there's some really interesting research to say that, firstly, we could just reframe that tax time experience. So in Chicago, they looked at the difference between, if you call it a rebate, so you're getting money back that's yours, or a bonus. And just simply by changing that framing, we put a different tag on that money and people will spend that differently. So in this study in Chicago, they gave $25 to 25 students and offered a bunch of discounted products that they could buy. And when they called it a rebate, so you're getting some money back that you earned, around 80% of the students saved the entire amount of money. When it was called a bonus, only around 16% of the students saved that entire amount of money. So we're very sensitive to these environmental factors, and Things like designing cockpits or hospitals or emergency exits, we've known this for a long time and we put a lot of science into those moments. But tax time, unfortunately, there just hasn't been as much thought put into that experience with the human customer in mind. And so we've been doing a lot of thinking around that moment and how do we make that an experience where it's easy for customers to harness that moment, move towards their goals, or build an emergency savings buffer, or indeed pay down debt.
Well, I understand that Commonwealth Bank runs a tax time experience or experiment every year, which provides customers with some information about spending their tax return. Can you go into a little bit more detail about these experiences, you know, what's involved and how the concepts come about?
Yeah. So we have been looking at running different types of tests and reimagining this experience with customers over recent years. To give you a couple of examples, in a recent year, we developed a tax time savings initiative. And this asks customers ahead of time to consider pre-committing part of your tax refund when it does arrive to put into savings. We also, in that same experiment, customers were offered the opportunity to save 75%, 50%, or 25% versus a different experience with 25%, 50%, and 75%. And what we found was both were effective in increasing savings. So the ability to pre-commit your saving before it arrives and the reversing of the menu options did result in increased savings behaviour. It's important to note that in all of these cases, the choice is still with the customer. So they're very, very easy to avoid. If you have something that you're really passionate about doing with your tax refund, that's your money. And these different experiences are just surfacing decisions to the customer in a way that allows them to see their own trade-offs and make their own choices towards their own goals.
Well, can you give me some examples of choice architecture and how it works in the real world and how it's helping to turn those intentions into outcomes?
Choice architecture is about the way that choices are presented to you. And we know that they can have predictable effects on what you will ultimately decide, even if they're just superficial changes. So whether an operation has a 5% mortality rate or a 95% survival rate, we know they're objectively the same thing, but you're going to respond quite differently to those two things. Similarly, if I said to you, what would you do if you get a $2,500 tax return in 1 month? Or if I said to you, here's $2,500 on the table right now, you might see those two amounts quite differently and you might spend them quite differently. And so as you say, all we're trying to do is help a customer that has long-term goals or intentions to have the opportunity to help them to materialise those intentions. So, for example, to pre-commit, as I said, what do you want to do with this money in a month's time? How do we help the customer to lock that in today so that when the money arrives, they don't change that preference and spend in a way that's inconsistent with their goals? We also make it really easy. So when the money does arrive, we can have a trigger that will alert a customer in real time the money's arrived and remind them of what their goals were. We may also add some just-in-time trade-offs to say, here are the different options you have and here's what they mean in financial outcomes for you. Again, leaving the full choice to the customer to do whatever they want at that point. Another example is splitting, for example. If you were to receive $2,000 into one account or $1,000 into each of two accounts, you may spend that money more slowly over time. We mentioned the idea of anchoring. So whether you have the option to save 75% or 25% of your tax refund, you're more likely to save more than if I presented that in reverse of 25% or 75%. And something I'd mentioned earlier with regards to choice architecture is around framing. We see that when customers are presented with the frame of bonus money or windfall money, that may then see the customer spend that money on a splurge or something rewarding or something fun. But if it's framed as a rebate or you're getting your own money back, the customer is more likely to save that or spend it in different ways.
Last year, data from the Commonwealth Bank revealed that 73% of millennials struggle to prioritize their financial well-being because thinking about money makes them anxious, and I'm a millennial, I can certainly attest to that. Do you think this trend applies to all Australian age groups, or is it specific to that millennial cohort?
I think the answer is probably both. So younger Australians have been through a particularly tough period over the last 12 months. A number of millennials are in casual or volatile work situations. So it's very hard when you don't know exactly what your next paycheck's going to be or when it's going to come. It's very, very hard to stay in control and stay on top of your financial well-being. Also, just by definition, being younger means you've got less experience with financial products. So whereas someone that's older may have had one or two or three mortgages or a number of credit cards over their lifetime, often a millennial might be doing something for the first time. And so if we learn by mistakes, there just hasn't been that opportunity yet. But some things I think are more universal. So I would say that we see much more broadly customers looking for more control over their money. We see customers more interested in timely feedback and insights and personalised services. I don't think this is necessarily specific to any single population.
And you've kind of touched on some of the factors already, and I know it's a bit of a big, broad, scary question, but why does thinking about money in particular make people so anxious?
I think a number of reasons. As I said, for a lot of financial decisions, we don't get a lot of practice. So choosing a super fund or getting a mortgage is something you'll only do a few times in your life. So we just haven't had that experience. It probably just doesn't feel as natural. They're often high stakes. So these can turn into kind of big outcomes if we get them right or wrong. So that kind of adds to the pressure. And often financial decisions are inherently complex or unnatural. So if you're choosing a credit card, you have to compare prices, points, rates, providers across 100 different products across the market. And that's not something that we were necessarily born to do naturally. Fortunately, there's lots of tools and services out there to help us now, but I think all of these things just add to that anxiety a little bit.
I think certainly my experience with these things you're talking about, making these financial decisions, is that the stakes, as you said, are so high, and if you mess it up, it could go badly wrong, and you almost get into this state of, well, I feel so paralyzed by the anxiety that I won't do anything. Do you have any kind of advice on, or does your research suggest anything about overcoming that paralysis and getting on with these decisions?
Yeah, I think so. If we were to consider that everyone has unlimited time, attention and ability, then more choice is a good thing because it just gives us more opportunity to find the perfect fit for us, right? And I think that's kind of been the line of thinking for a long time, but the research shows us that you can actually have too much of a good thing, and if once the choice set gets bigger and bigger and bigger, we can actually see a decline in engagement, and what we get is actually people choosing not to choose. So people will disengage and not engage with those product sets because there's too much choice. This is something we should address because often it means Australians miss out on important products and services, whether it's in health or financial services or otherwise. So something we're looking at is through our work with Benefits Finder, for example, how do we personalise that list and point you to the top one, two or three ideas with the longer list certainly available, but making it easy for you to identify those choices that should be most relevant to you. And then there's lots of science around how do we cluster choices, how do we provide feedback, how do we provide the right information about trade-offs and differences between products. I think the answer is not to take choice away from people, it's to present it in a much more manageable way, where it's more obvious what your best choice is for what you want to do today and tomorrow.
Well, you've certainly changed how I think about my tax return and my income. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me, Sam.